to appear with us on the Open Mind Show in Monterey Bay anytime he wishes, and if he's visiting in the area. And, of course, Bill, your producer, has the phone number for us up here now.
Okay.
And later on during the week, I want to try and get to do a promo for our show.
Be more than happy to do so, Chuck.
Okay, Bill. Thank you kindly.
Thank you for your interest, and keep up the good work up there.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye. And we have Gene on the line. Hello, Gene.
Good evening to both of you. There's so many fascinating things that you're discussing, but I'm kind of stuck with one of your early subjects, the things that are in the Bible that are divisible by seven.
Who did all
that counting, and how many man days, how many man years did it take?
A lot.
Well, the source of that is a Harvard scholar named Panin, P-A-N-I-N. It's very obscure, but I'm trying to get the computer printout of the Bible in Aramaic, and I understand that IBM did come out with Hebrew on a computer, and the Bible can be reduced to a computer printout, and I can verify all of these things.
Every now and then when I type on my computer, it looks like it's Hebrew.
But it is remarkable, and no other book can make that claim.
If you'd like a list of all of those, you know, Gene, just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll make them available.
I have made note of that, and I will be writing to you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for checking in with us.
Yeah.
And we have George on the line. Hello, George.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I have two questions I'd like to pose to you about all this that we've been listening to tonight and talking about. My friend and I were talking about this the other night, and I took the skeptic side of the argument just to get the discussion going.
There's nothing the matter with that.
Two questions. Jimmy Carter, I believe, when he was elected president, was a member of a group who said he had seen a UFO, I think.
We have had on this air quite an extensive look at Jimmy Carter's report, and I think he made that to MUFON.
But I remember before he was elected, he said, when he was elected, he promised us that he would use all the presidential powers to go through NASA's files and the defense files and let us know honestly whether we had a valid reason to believe in such a thing.
Well, what Jimmy Carter found out when he became president is that you are not commander-in-chief.
I guess so. That's what the whole thing seemed to boil out.
It boils down to that, and the president does not have all of the powers that we like to have, that we think that we have invested in him.
Uh-huh. And I remember he came out and said he had no proof for us to keep us believing in such a thing. Next.
Well, I had the Jimmy Carter report on our first show, and I read it, and we quoted the dates and times and places. And it was...
To his credit, however, he has never recanted that. He just hasn't gone into it any further.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to ask another question. It's about the government and NASA and their... if they know something, why isn't it that they're not actually... Okay, the government is starting to release now a little bit of information. I'm going to get this fellow's book, The Clear Intent. I'm really interested in that.
I get that, yes.
The government now, apparently, according to what we've heard tonight, is apparently starting to release some information about all this. But at the same time, we haven't seen any of this used as ammunition, for lack of a better word, to spur our country into spending more money on investigations of these things.
Well,
rather, why would they want to cover it up rather than say, well, this is happening, let's spend and explore it, you know,
George,
this is real reason.
George, get into the real world. Take a look at the men and women who comprise the Congress of the United States of America. They have to deal with their constituency. And if Alan Cranston was to support a NASA proposal based upon the fact that there are aliens in space, his first contention would be that the people of California would write him off. Or if Bobby Fiedler were to do that, or if any member of the House or any member of the Senate were to do that, their interest is in maintaining their position in Congress and to attach themselves to anything as far-fetched as it might seem to the general public as this would be political suicide. And
Publicly. But privately, the money is being spent and the effort is going on full blast.
Yeah, there is a lot of it being spent. But it's hidden in budgets, and it's all kinds of things. Just like a lot of research of our great aerospace industries is hidden. If you look at those corporate budgets, you'll find a lot of hidden money there, where they're deeply involved in developing these propulsion systems and weapon systems and navigation systems, but it's not a matter of public record.
I think to answer your question, at the beginning of this project, when it unfolded on the leaders of this country. It was so far out and so incredible that they, it took them a while to get a handle on it. And when they got a handle on it and they were forming the outer territory as a colony, at that point, they had to keep it secret because the population would be interfering with the smooth progress of the concept. And the concept has gone along far enough where if the Earth were destroyed today, there are millions of Earth humans living on Mars, which could keep the civilization going and then be transplanted to this or another planet in the future.
One of the problems we have is that our culture, our society, our ethic has it that the Lord created the universe for our amusement, and this is the center of everything. And obviously, the fact that there could be another human being that came from a far place that is more evolved than ours violates religious beliefs and on and on and on and on. You know, it's just ad nauseum.
Right. Well, thank you very much. And this is a fantastic program.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you're along with us, George.
All right.
Okay. And let's see. Linda, what's on your mind?
Well, I think I have a sort of interesting story for you. Do you want me to tell it to you?
Well, if you can do it in 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, around when I was about 13 years old, my stepfather and I were walking out of our house in the twilight to go somewhere. We passed across of our lawn, and there was all of a sudden this gigantic, well, it was about 2 feet in diameter, round light that passed us. And I remember that we both had to pull back our heads, or else I suppose we thought it would hit us. And I remember that it was very, very quick. And I turned around to see it leave, and it was gone. And it was not something like a frisbee or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was shortly before or after that experience, he had had a heart attack. And I was curious, to wondering if that sounds suspiciously like something connected with UFOs.
Well, no, it's not unusual to have an experience with a sighting of a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that most everybody has. That gets to be old hat after a while.
Mm-hmm.
But if it has any kind of effect on your health, it may be the fact that this shocked your system so much.
Well, the aliens say that they're doing this to just bring attention to their presence. And they're attracting enough people to get enough people to talk to each other where this is a real phenomenon. And then they come in at key times with very educational inputs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. If you'd like to hear alien thinking and alien politics, I could go on. Now you've been buzzed by a fireball.
Got your attention.
We got your attention.
Mm-hmm.
You see, now if I start speaking to the hard facts, well, you may be inclined to listen.
Well, that was funny because I didn't realize exactly what it was then, but years later I heard that a lot of these orbs of light were connected somehow with UFOs.
Yes.
And I was wondering what...
there are hundreds of thousands of such reports, Linda, so it's nothing unusual at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
unusual for the ones who've never heard of it, though.
Well, I suppose.
Yes.
Okay, Linda, thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Okay, thank you.
All right. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and with me tonight is talking about alien beings and Earth space and interfering and intervening in human activities. And with us is Edwin Slade. Edwin?
Well, I wanted to elaborate on the personalities of Jehovah and Ipswich. And I'm trying to just give this as factual as I can because I'm really not trying to upset the established tenets of religion. I don't think I am, and I think I'm elaborating on some little-known facts.
Oh, that's okay. You know, we don't mind doing it.
Well, we have Jehovah, the God of creation, who's known as the Lord of the universe, and his brother, which I've mentioned is pronounced Ipswich, is called the King of Wisdom. Now, the good brother and the bad brother are both physical incarnations from the spirit Arahat Ataseta, which is the ancient name of the founding spirit.
I have read the book Arahat Ataseta, or however you pronounced it there. the German translation of the English, difficult to read, but fascinating reading.
Well, this is the basis of our understanding of these gods. The incarnation of the good God could not be made without an incarnation of an evil God. The two principles, good and evil, are in everything. So when they were formed, the mirror image had to be formed. It had to exist as both reflections of the same original spirit.
One, a source for developing determination and will.
It's the eternal battle of the yin and the yang, or what have you, that's going on now. And it's going on, and at this time it concerns us.
Mm-hmm.
And we should try and find out as much as we can about it. And many books deal with it. As I say, the most ancient books of the Zohar, the Bible, and the Buddhist books, and the Bhagavad Gita, and all these ancient books deal with this very topic.
And the Kabbalah.
Yes, and I think they have particular interest now, because the politics, as they're shaping up, from someone who reputes to be on the inside, is as follows. There is an imminent battle raging between Jehovah, and the dates for this battle, the Battle of Armageddon, the last battle, which is prophesied in the Bible, is set in this century. And most authors feel it will begin sometime around 1991, if sooner. In fact, there's a new book out by Henry Hall called 1991. And it's an interesting pocketbook. It gives basically the timetable and the prediction of this event. Now, Quetzal, the Pleiadian, says that this destruction of the world will be resisted by the forces of the Pleiades, because they don't think it's proper for anyone to destroy anything else. Remember, one of the rules that the Confederation lives by is persuasion, not force. So for Jehovah to destroy is not within the laws of the Confederation.
Now, we're talking about the dark side of the other twin, Jehovah, not the good guy, but the bad guy.
That's right.
There are two of them.
That's right.
Okay.
And Jehovah,
and they are men.
And they are incarnated to look like men. They are a higher form of spirit, which is reduced to sight and mm-hmm. and feeling, and they can communicate with earthlings. Now, Jehovah's claim is, well, since he created the world, he's entitled to destroy it. And loud cries of resistance on the other...
Well, he almost did a couple of times.
Yes, and he destroyed it by flood in the time of Noah. And to all accounts, I mean, that was a historical event. And now he's really angry, and his anger is based on man's inhumanity to man. And the Pleiadians say over and over again...
Now, this is the bad one that's angry about man's inhumanity to man?
Yes, the Pleiadians say over and over again that what would stop all this eventual destruction is just for man to abide by the principles of brotherly love and basically the Ten Commandments in the Bible.
Maybe we should get rid of the freeways.
Well, I must say that in discussing the Ten Commandments, the Pleiadians go by 12 commandments. And they say that the Ten Commandments were sort of an encapsulated short form. The 11th commandment, I've discovered, is curse not the truth. That's one of their commandments,
mm-hmm.
which the truth must be revered and not cursed. And that's an important commandment that they live by. And that's another reason to respect what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And the 12th commandment is... this is a very interesting commandment. This commandment, I studied it at great length when I was there, and it basically says, that the soul of man is immortal. And according to them, it's been 5 billion years since it's been created. So the Pleiadians say the soul of mankind is 5 billion years old, and it is a spark or part of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that part is immortal.
It's a part piece of God.
It's immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the precious part of man. And they say that in the 12th commandment, they say that this is the part of man that should be respected when you pray to God. It's not necessary to bow down. It's not necessary to lie on your face or your knees or give your money to anybody else. They insist that the holy part of man is that part within him which is immortal, which is his self.
Mm-hmm.
And that part must be revered and no other.
That's right.
That's a very interesting commandment.
It's one of the aspects of our life that we've gotten things backward. We figure that our spiritual side is to serve the physical side rather than the other way around.
Well, they specifically say not to put a trust or faith in cults.
Mm-hmm.
And that to look for leaders outside yourself is unnecessary, because within yourself you have everything to discover good from evil. And it's a very, very deep, interesting...
All of that information is encoded into your spiritual intelligence, as we talk about here quite often.
Yes.
And that is a part of the soul. That is a part of this little part of you, which is the part piece of God.
Well, this gets back into... Well, there's so many plots and subplots going on here.
I have a subplot that I have to deal with right now, if you don't mind, Edmund. At 10 minutes, Evelyn has been up to something over there with his investigation, which gives me a moment just to mention. We were going to go to England in the last week in October. We're having to put it off until the spring. We just didn't get enough time to get everything all together, and by the time we got it all together, it was too late. All of those that signed up for the trip have been contacted, and if you want to go, it's still going to be the same fantastic trip, but we're going to have to reschedule it, okay? We were going to be briefed by Lord Clincarty when we get over there, but that'll be this spring. Go ahead.
Well, I want to say that Lord Clincarty has been chairman of a subcommittee in the House of Lords and Parliament that has maintained a running a dialogue on this subject since 1979. I was the first foreign speaker to be invited at the House of Lords, and I've kept up relations ever since. And I'd like to say that you're not hearing this speech for the first time either, because I have a news article. This past month, I'd like to say that intelligence officer in England named Gordon Creighton addressed Parliament and says that the danger of UFOs is very great. He said that we're poised on a brink of a nuclear disaster, and those who are watching over us from other planets are sending UFOs here, warning us not to press the nuclear button. And Gordon Creighton is an author and very active in UFOs, and he's also in the British MI5, and he's been very outspoken on this because he has had contact that prompted him to speak out against the nuclear threat.
Was he involved in that very dramatic contact up by the American air base there near the RAF
yes,
base?
In Suffolk, England. This is what prompted it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, well, that was a famous sighting that was put on TV.
Just last year.
Yeah, and everything. Well, the more intelligent, learned people around the world are speaking out and saying this. They're not doing it for profit. I'd like to say that I have nothing to sell. I haven't written a book. And I'm pleased and delighted at this opportunity to share my thoughts. And that's all it is. There's a very urgent request on the part of the aliens. to get people to speak out. And this overrides any human or earthly desires.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to say that that you've afforded me an excellent opportunity. And I can also say I have not been interfered with in any way by anybody.
And neither have I, and I do this all the time.
And it's truly an open mind, and it's a very excellent...
You know, one of the things that troubles me, and we've got just a few moments before we have to take a break and get back to the callers. We sit here in Los Angeles, at Hollywood, and one of the greatest teaching instruments in the world is the motion picture screen. And as we look at what is being thrown up on the motion picture screen by Hollywood producers and writers, it's pure garbage. It paints a picture that is totally distorted and unreal and untrue. I wish that one of them had the courage enough to tell a true story on that screen, because it's far more fascinating than those idiotic things that they have been putting out. You know, the monsters and the aliens and all of this stuff. If they would delve into what is really known and deal with the fact of the matter, it would be far more exciting than that just bunk that, sure, it makes a lot of money, I suppose, but it is not doing any good whatsoever, except for somebody's pocketbook, I suppose, down the line. And unfortunately, that happens to be the bottom line for so much of the mentality of this world. Well, there's our little song. We've ended hour two of Open Mind on this Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins. My guest tonight is Eddie Prevention of the Alien in Earth Society. And that intervention has been going on, evidently, as we look at the facts, the figures, and the data from the very beginning of time, as we understand time, which is 7 minutes past the 11 o'clock mark. Mm-hmm. Edwin, got one more little thing that you wanted to share with us, and we do want to answer as many of these questions as we can.
Well, I'm sorry that I've left the listener with a rather gloomy forecast for the future, but it's not all that gloomy, because the message that I'd like to convey is that although the world may be destroyed by man's inhumanity to man,
working at it,
there is a plan that's being put in force now. And the plan is for the evacuation and rescue of all those souls and all those people who have abided by the commandments and who are righteous and who are good citizens. And plans are being made to put this into effect to save all those good people.
How are they going to make that determination?
Very simple. And this is the most incredible thing of all. I don't know if I can say it without being ridiculed, but I know your listeners won't do that. But the idea is so striking and so flabbergasting that I mean it's outrageous. But the message that we're getting is that right now at this moment there are 1 million UFOs in the vicinity of the Earth. Right now, as I speak, there's 1 million UFOs, and they're cast in the invisible mode.
I've seen some of them on the San Diego freeway, I think.
Well, from time to time, they can become invisible by the pilots. They can become visible by the pilots, and they can cause trouble here on Earth. They can attract attention and so forth. But I'm been informed that there are 1 million UFOs. There is a force of 30 million aliens deployed in near-Earth space. And between that force and those vehicles, there is enough power to evacuate all righteous people from the Earth in 15 minutes.
You know, this corresponds greatly with the information that we're getting from Greta Woodrow, who wrote The Slide of Light, who will be with us in December. She is, her information comes a little bit differently in that she goes into a trance and they talk to a group called the Ugatans in Greta's book, who claim to be a part of this vast force of which you're talking about. And they are poised and ready. And they're giving information about how we should be ready for this difficult time that we're going to face. Afterwards, it will be much, much better. And Greta will be on in December, so that'll be quite interesting to continue that thought with her.
Well, the command ship, to give you an idea of the power of the aliens, the command ship is reputed to be, from the testimony of the aliens themselves, 1,450 miles on a side. The planform is square, and it's 1,450 miles on a side. Now, this is the size of their main command ship. This is referred to in the Bible as the New Jerusalem. This is a huge spaceship.
Mm-hmm. That's big.
That's big.
All right.
Now, the way the evacuation is going to be handled is that at the rate things are going, it will be men who will destroy men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there'll be an outbreak of some violence on the Earth. That, remember now, the Earth is controlled by free will.
Mm-hmm.
And if some leader wants to press the doomsday button, the gods permit him to press the button.
Well, that's pretty well spelled out in Revelation that happens.
And when that happens, the aliens will evacuate the world population in a very short time, shorter than the time it takes for the missile to hit target. Now, the manner of evacuation is that they intend to put down a beam from each spaceship, and the beam focuses on the righteous people and gets them up, just sucks them up. We had such a beam in New York about a month ago. A lady went up on a roof and she claimed that a beam sucked her up, and she went into UFO and then she was returned.
We have a number of such stories.
Yes, the story is the aliens' attempt to let people know this exists.
But you didn't answer the question. How? What is the determining factor about who is righteous and who's not?
Very simple. The person who gets in the beam and who goes into the beam, remember, this is free choice. If he goes into the beam, he gets lifted up. But if an evil person goes into the beam, he's destroyed by the beam.
Well, how does the beam know?
The beam knows.
Yes.
Each person emits an aura of the chakra out of the top of his head. And the aliens say that beam travels up into space, and a righteous person has a very visible beam of the proper color. And they can beam down on that, and they can rescue him. And a person who tries to get in the rescue mission that doesn't belong just doesn't
work out. Well, I can understand that. You know, we have talked quite often about some of the things we've learned on this show about when you think you create energy, let's put it that way, and that thought produced energy is either going to be harmonious or discordant. And so you're saying that in using that as a context, there is a way to delineate between the harmonious energy that's being created by the human and the discordant.
Well, this brings up a whole field of metaphysics and occult science. Now, you know, Bill, from my background, I've been raised and educated as a scientist and engineer. And I dealt very marginally with these concepts, and I must tell you that I'm getting together all the information I can and reading on all the classics on metaphysics that I can get a hold of, because it has great pertinence to these issues.
We think it does. That's the reason we talk about them a lot. Are you ready to talk to our group out there?
Yes.
Okay. We have Bob on the line. Hello, Bob.
Yeah. Bill?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a couple of things. Earlier, Mr. Slade had mentioned a book or something clear.
Oh, yes, Clear Intent. That was a book that revealed the cover-up on the part of the military over UFOs.
Okay. In the last 10 years or so, you had mentioned, for a previous caller, had mentioned Project Blue Book.
Mm-hmm.
They brought that out in the television series. And since then, there's been a number of movies that I know Bill, he's a little upset with them. They've come out, Close Encounters and E.T. and such. Not so much Star Wars. But me and some of my friends talk about this all the time. And to me, it would just seem a logical way to more or less break the shock to people that there are UFOs, or if they decide someday just to reveal themselves, that since we've already been exposed to the possibility, especially with some of the more recent movies that are, they're done not low budget, let's say.
Yes, yes, definitely.
But to try and break open the, you know, get rid of the shock that this might real be.
You know, Bob, Close Encounters was closer to anything that I have seen.
Oh, it's one of my favorite.
In the direction that this kind of material should be treated on the screen, and I certainly do commend Stephen for his work. In fact, the little figures that he used at the end of it, he got that from research from APRO down in Tucson. Those are was a putting together of a number of contactees, as we recognize the people being from Zeta 1, Zeta 2, Reticulum.
Yes, but remember, there's 5,000 civilizations, and they're all different, and all the figures speak for themselves. So you have many diverse opinions on the best way to do this, and the civilization that's enticing men to Mars is...